Sea lice are parasites found naturally in wild fish species like salmon. They can weaken and sometimes kill the fish they infect. In British Columbia and along the Pacific coast, there's an ongoing debate about whether salmon farms are contributing to sea lice infestations in wild salmon stocks. A scientific study just released is now providing more ammunition for those concerned about the effects of aquaculture on wild fish stocks. Marty Kokosik is lead author of the study and a researcher at the University of Alberta, but today he's in our CBC Victoria studio. Welcome to Maritime Noon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, could you give us, an aerial view? If you're looking down from a helicopter, where was this salmon farm located?
Well, we were studying the outmigration of a couple or several populations of juvenile pink and chum salmon. They're migrating down a long, narrow inlet. The inlet is about maybe 100 kilometers long, pretty long.
Yes.
And about halfway along this migration route was an isolated salmon farm. And we were sampling these fish at about 2 to 3 kilometer intervals for about 60 kilometers of this migration route, and the farm was right in the middle of that. So what we got at the end of the day is a very detailed picture of what these fish looked like before they met the salmon farm, as they were passing the farm, and then as they continued on out to sea.
So how big were these little pink and chum salmon?
They're very small. Pink and chum salmon are unique among salmon in the sense that they enter the marine waters immediately after they hatch from the gravel. They don't spend any residency time in fresh water. So they hit the salt water when they're about 3 centimeters long and half a gram. So they're very small.
So what did you find about the fish farm, first of all, where the salmon were being farmed? What was the prevalence of sea lice there?
Well, we know that the farm fish themselves had an average level of lice for farm salmon in the area. And in terms of the wild fish that were migrating past, before they encountered the farm, about 6% of those fish were infected. And after they passed the farm, about 70% were infected, with an average of about 2 lice each.
And how long did it take the small pink and chum salmon to pass by the salmon farm?
We're not so sure about that. We think they're migrating at maybe a couple kilometers a day, but that's some statistics that we weren't able to tease out from our analysis. What we were able to tease out of the analysis was the spatial footprint of the farm, meaning the magnitude of transmission of lice from farm salmon to wild salmon and the spatial extent of that transmission.
So do you know how close the pink and chum salmon came to the salmon farm?
They have no choice but to migrate directly past it.
So what, a matter of meters?
Potentially a matter of meters. We know that the juvenile pinks and chums stick to the shorelines, and that the salmon farm itself is situated maybe 30 meters or 40 meters off the shore. So they're passing very near the farm.
Now, what about the sea lice? I mean, do they exist? How far away from the farm do they exist? Just out there in the water before they attach themselves to something?
Well, the big complication to all these issues is that sea lice are a naturally occurring parasite. And so the really important result of this paper is that we've been able to distinguish between farm origin lice and naturally occurring lice, and that enabled us to work out this footprint. And the footprint looks something like this. The transmission of lice from farm salmon to wild salmon exceeded natural levels for about 30 kilometers of the migration route around the farm, and peaked in intensity near the farm at rates that were about 70 times more than natural.
Okay, then what are the consequences for the small pink and chum salmon once they pick up sea lice passing the salmon farm?
Well, we're just starting to work that out. We know from studies of their Atlantic salmon cousins that sea lice can kill a juvenile salmon, and there's sublethal effects as well. They reduce the swimming performance of the fish and probably make them more susceptible to predation. We know that juvenile pinks and chums are substantially smaller than Atlantics, so you'd expect these impacts to be even more severe for the fish that we're studying.
Are there any dangers for other species?
Certainly all the salmonid species are at risk. And
that would include?
That would include all the Pacific salmon. So we're talking about coho salmon, chinook salmon, pink salmon, chum salmon, sockeye, and then there's also steelhead and sea run cutthroat trout in the area.
What about things like herring?
Well, there's two species of lice that we identified, actually, and one of those species is known to exist on herring and other species of fish. So there's potential for impacts to go well beyond salmon species and infect herring and attack herring, and that would be very dangerous from an ecosystem perspective.
So if we were to do anything about, you know, what you've pointed out in the study, what would it be to reduce, I guess, the risk of amplifying the sea lice problem in aquaculture and then passing it on to wild stocks? What could be done?
Well, the aquaculture industry treats their fish with pesticides right now, which does control sea lice levels to a degree. The pesticide is a crustacean neurotoxin, and it's not healthy for humans to eat either. And so it's... that's not really the desirable choice, and we also know that the parasites can evolve resistance to antibiotics and pesticides. Essentially, we think that the farm salmon need to be isolated and separated from wild salmon when the juveniles are migrating past. And you can do that in several ways. The first obvious one is you can move the farms into areas where juvenile salmon don't migrate. The other option is to move the farms on land or move to close containment systems where the flow of materials and wastes into and out of the farm would be controlled and treated.
So in a way, this was a worst case scenario where that salmon farming was located.
No, actually, it was an exceptional situation. The year that we did the study was in 2003, and the provincial government imposed a fallowing on most of the farms along this route. So this is what enabled us to study intensively the effect of one single salmon farm over a 60-kilometer stretch of migration route. Generally, what happens in this area is that the juvenile pinks and chums have to pass by about four, anywhere between three and six salmon farms before they make it out to the ocean.
But there was only one this particular year?
In this particular study, yeah, we were able to focus intensively on one.
So aside from some of the things you just mentioned, what other messages are there for the aquaculture industry itself and for government regulators?
Well, one of the other key findings of the paper was that once lice are transmitted to the wild fish, the wild fish themselves transport the lice down the migration routes, and then the lice can then breed, and the parasite population grows and spreads. And so this is the wild fish themselves are a vector to spread the disease to other salmon farms and also to other species of salmon. So there's a lot of complexities here that we really need to understand if we're going to manage this system in a way that will protect the wild fish.
All right, Mr. Krakosik, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Marty Krakosik is lead author of a new study on the infectious impact of salmon farms on wild salmon. He's a researcher at the University of Alberta.